Welcome to episode number 13 of Tech Talk Today on WCCR 94.5 LPFM, live from the beautiful campus of University of the Cumberlands in Williamsburg, Kentucky. Thank you for joining us today as we remember 9/11/2001 and all the men and women who keep our wonderful country safe. Triple T provides you with the latest news in the tech world and our opinions of what it all means. As always, we enjoy tweets to @WCCRTechTalk during the show with your comments and ideas. I'm Justin Hensley.
And I'm Kurt Lawson. Let's get Tech Talk Today started with this week's Tech Roundup. And let's see here. In Gmail news, I guess, 5 million usernames and passwords were published from Gmail. 5 million usernames and passwords were published on a Russian Bitcoin forum. Much of the information is old and potentially out of date, Google representatives told Russian media. The so-called leak may be more accurately described as a collection of phished and hacked credentials collected over years. In fact, many of the accounts have long been suspended or are matched with very old passwords. Skipping a little bit. Database of these usernames, which was first reported by CNews, was posted on Tuesday evening to btcsec.com, a Russian-language Bitcoin security forum. There's a couple links. I'll have to see if I can find those that actually you can test to see if your username or password was compromised on this. And, it just says, you know, you're okay, you're not okay. It was in Russian. So a lot of these were English, Russian, and Spanish speaking users of Google services, of Gmail and Google Plus. So
yeah, we're going to talk more about that in our deep dive. And I mean, that's just a mess. I mean, there's no other way to say it, except that's a mess. And you know, I'm not going to hound this right now because, again, we're going to talk about this later on. But, I mean, change your password. I mean, if you have a Gmail account, go ahead, you know, just go ahead and change your password. If you have a Gmail account or if you have another account that you're using your Gmail or email address for and you have possibly the same password on that account too, change that password too. Because what's happening here is not only are people being able to get into people's Gmail accounts, they're also being able to get into other accounts. And Kurt, correct me if I'm wrong, but my understanding of this from what I've read and from what I understand is Google didn't get hacked. It's a database of people who have used Gmail username and passwords in other locations, as far as we can tell.
Either that or they were fished for. Okay. So somebody said, here, put this in and you'll win your free iPad or some other, and they put their password in there and then they tried it and it worked.
So that's a great point. Never, ever, ever, ever put your username or password in a form that you're not completely sure about. So, you know, if you get an email that says, you know, you can win a free bucket of KFC chicken, click here, you know, and it asks you to put in your Google credentials. Don't do that. You know, I mean, go to KFC and buy the bucket of chicken. Don't try to get a free bucket of chicken.
And then change your password.
Yeah, exactly. Because what you're going to get is you're not going to get a free bucket of chicken. You're going to get a bunch of malware, and you're going to get your account phished, and potentially you're going to get your credit card number stolen. And man, a bucket of chicken would just be a lot cheaper than that. I don't know why I got on chicken for, but I like chicken.
You told me that there was some security group that did a test. They did a little audit or whatever, and they sent an email out to its users and said, you know, put your password in here to test its crackability. And they said, you could win a chance to win chicken. And people had actually called saying, where's my chicken?
Yeah, exactly. That was me that told you that.
Oh, man.
I was told that by a security person, and that was an interesting, interesting conversation. Network World article about Bitcoin. We've talked a little bit about that here in the past. Coinbase, which is one of the more prominent exchanges for buying and selling Bitcoins. Remember, Bitcoin is an online currency. You have to go online to purchase a Bitcoin. You have to transact that online. They are opening up wider access to the digital currency in Europe. The company announced Wednesday the international expansion of its service into 13 countries across Europe. People in those countries can now use the Coinbase to buy and sell Bitcoins. And businesses can accept payments by linking a European bank account to a Coinbase account. The services are available in the following countries: Italy, Spain, France, Belgium, the Netherlands, Austria, Cyprus, Finland, Greece, Latvia, Malta, Portugal, and Slovakia. Those all sound familiar to me because they've all been playing in the, or most of them have been playing in the FIBA World Cup, and I've been watching them.
Yeah.
So I kind of know how to pronounce them, sort of. After Coinbase held talks there with regulators and financial authorities in those countries, they were able to open up there. Coinbase operates three Bitcoin services, an exchange for buying and selling Bitcoins, a digital wallet for storing them, and a payment processing service that makes it easier for merchants to accept them. People almost anywhere in the world could use the wallet, but the exchange and payment services are limited to the, limited to the U.S. Until now. With this expansion, Coinbase hopes to grow the use of Bitcoin among businesses in Europe and facilitate cross-border payments. So pretty big move here for the movement of Bitcoin to expand internationally.
Yeah.
This was going well for Coinbase in the U.S., but now to expand into Europe and hopefully maybe other places would be great.
That is great. Let's see here. Well, I'm sure we've talked a lot about how Windows 8 basically isn't doing so hot. I wouldn't call it a flat-out failure, but it definitely hasn't caught on for a lot of people, specifically the corporate world. So, having used the Windows 8 preview, you pretty much just used it and thought, oh, that's cool, that's how it's going to be. And in this case, Windows 9 public preview, which is coming at the end of the month, is going to ask for a lot of feedback, almost to the point of annoyance. Windows 9 preview, expected on September 30th, will ask for feedback almost to the point of pestering you. They want to collect all sorts of input from users on everything, apparently. And clearly, this is more of an enterprise play than a consumer play, because it was enterprises that rejected Windows 8 and kept buying machines with Windows 7. The surveys are said to be large windows and cover a wide range of topics. Judging by the great detail it had, this is a really good source, or someone lied a big time to the person who reported this. So, one window said to read, "Please share your feedback with Microsoft about searching. Anything related to your search experience can be entered into this box. After you answer that, new follow-up questions will appear. Microsoft will use this feedback over the course of the beta." And it says it will release more public previews to, you know, as they tweak it more and more. So,
yeah, I mean, Windows 9, I hope it's not asking people to the point of being annoying, though. You know, that would be annoying.
Of course, it's a public preview. So, honestly, if you want the Windows 9 to be better than Windows 8, I'd say do the preview and start, of course, it'll be the 30th, but, you know, actually put your feedback out there. It seems like they're actually going to listen. They seem to be doing well with, what's his name? The new CEO over there.
Oh, Nadella?
Nadella.
Yeah, Nadella's doing good. And, you know, I mean, they're cloud-based. Once again, we know Windows 9 is going to have a lot of cloud-based stuff in it.
Yep.
Because Microsoft has shown that they're going to be a cloud-based company. So, you know, good for them. And I wish them the best with Windows 9, and I hope that it's a operating system that we can use in the business world as well. That would be great. Network World article about OneDrive, another Microsoft product addressing an issue often overlooked by cloud storage users when choosing a service. Microsoft has increased the maximum size for files uploaded to OneDrive from 2 gigabytes to 10 gigabytes. So this isn't the maximum amount of storage that you can have. This is the maximum file size that you can upload exactly one time. And you know, it obviously depends on how fast your internet speed is at your location on how fast that file is going to upload, but they give you the ability to upload a 10 gig file instead of just a 2 gig file. Although cloud storage providers now offer consumers massive amounts of space at little or no cost, the size limit on individual files would become a barrier for people who need to store very large files, especially in areas like media, science, architecture, and engineering. So you're talking like CAD drawings and video files and things like that.
Right.
Being able to store larger files has been one of the top requests from OneDrive users, Microsoft said in a blog post on Wednesday. Ironically, the change applies now only to OneDrive and not to OneDrive for Business, which I found to be kind of strange, which is the version for professional use. They do plan to make the changes to OneDrive for Business, but they didn't say when. On the consumer side, the move makes OneDrive more competitive with Dropbox, which has a 10 gigabyte limit for file uploads from its website and no limit on the uploads via desktop and mobile apps. Google Drive lets users upload up to 5 terabytes in size, as long as they're not converted to Google Docs, Slides, or and Sheets. There's a 50 megabyte file size limit on presentations and documents uploaded to Drive and converted to Docs and Slides, and a 100 meg limit on spreadsheets converted to Sheets. Meanwhile, Box starts with a 250 meg file size limit on its free plan and tops out at 5 gigs on its Business and Enterprise. So obviously Google wins there. I mean, 5 terabytes in size.
That's crazy.
For a file. I mean, that's a huge file.
I would like to know what one file is that large. I'm sure that's out there, but...
Yeah, I mean, you could take a long video in HD, and that'd be it, right?
That's true.
You have to have something to store it on.
Maybe it's in 3D.
Yeah, maybe it's in 4K. Like, 4K, that's 4K. That would get it pretty
quick. That makes sense. That makes sense. All right, let's see here. There wasn't really an article on this, but I'm sure people have heard about this. There were hacked celebrity pictures, lots of hacked celebrity pictures, all on iCloud. And basically, from what I've gathered together, someone hacked into a lot of celebrities' iCloud accounts, including like Jennifer Lawrence. It's the biggest one, had the most pictures, I believe there was. And then someone posted this leak to 4chan. Now, 4chan is a website that is nothing is stored. As you know, a board might be up there for just a few minutes. It might be up for a couple hours, but there's nothing ever archived. Now, people might take screenshots of it, but 4chan doesn't store it themselves. Then someone posted that to Reddit, and Reddit is where it was all linked to it. And then a guy created what's called a subreddit for all these photos. So Reddit's received a lot of heat because that's where a lot of people have found all these photos. And there's multiple levels of fault here, I guess you could say. If I have so many failed attempts on an account, that account should lock, I would think. And iCloud doesn't have that in place. Because somebody, Apple's insisting there wasn't a breach. So what's happened is somebody either brute force attacked, whatever kind of attacked, these celebrities' iCloud accounts, and then was able to either restore their backups or just copy their photos over. So that's essentially how they're saying it. The accounts were hacked. This guy named John Manise, 33-year-old creator of this subreddit that was expressly created to share these photos, I think he's gotten in some trouble, but he says, you know, he shouldn't be at fault because he didn't hack the photos. He wasn't the one. He just created a space for them to share them. So there's all kinds of people going back and forth saying Reddit should be in trouble with this. Reddit should be shut down. People saying that this John guy, he should be in trouble. After a few days, Reddit did take down, this subreddit that had these photos. And, some of the pictures, of a person that was, when they were taken, the person was still a minor. So the FBI, there's an investigation. So change your passwords frequently.
Yeah, I mean, and with iCloud, what you're going to end up getting is you're going to get a notification on your device. It says something along the lines of, you know, your password doesn't match, or you just changed your password or something like that. Mm-hmm. If there's an account change. And if that's the case, and you need to be aware of that, I mean, you need to take care of that right then.
Mm-hmm.
You don't need to wait. Because the longer you wait, then the more of a chance there is that somebody's going to get in there and steal the stuff out of your account if they haven't already.
Right.
Another thing is, you know, maybe you need to reduce the amount of stuff you put on iCloud. You know, photos are one thing. I mean, you know, take a photo of my dog that I don't have. I don't have a dog. What am I talking about? Take a photo of my kids. Take a photo of my wife. You know, something like that. I mean, could somebody use that? Sure, whatever. But, you know, if you're putting sensitive data on your phone, first of all, you probably shouldn't do that. Secondly, if you are, then you probably don't need to turn on iCloud for things like your notes and things like that. You know, so just kind of be smart about it.
Yep. So...
Network World article. I thought you had something else there. Network World article about wireless, actually wireless everything. Laptops that require no wires for charging, display, data transfers, or docking will be available by the end of next year, an Intel executive said on Wednesday. The laptops will free users from power bricks and wires for connecting to external displays, said Kirk Scoggin, the Intel Senior Vice President and General Manager of the PC Client Group, during a keynote at the Intel Developer Forum in San Fran. A wire-free reference laptop will be released early next year for hardware developers to make components and peripherals that take advantage of wireless technologies. Intel is demonstrating technologies at IDF that highlight the promise of wire-free computing experience. Skugan Gubada, Skagen?
Honestly, I was thinking Skaugen.
Skaugen. Oh, that's even better. And this guy who works for Intel demonstrated a reference laptop beaming 4K video. Now, keep in mind, 4K video is high bandwidth, okay? Wirelessly to an HD LG TV. A laptop that can be wirelessly charged when placed on a surface is being demonstrated on the show floor as well. And lots of wire-free things, obviously, you know, wireless internet, wireless connectivity, connecting to other peripherals wirelessly. And we can connect a lot of things wirelessly right now, but to me, the wireless charging, you know, that's really a big thing. I mean, being able to charge a device without a wire. And I know there's already phones out there like that.
Yeah, there's a plate. I think it's called a QI plate, but plate for my Nokia Lumia 920. You just place it on there, and what it does is just starts charging. That's it. It does have to be, you know, set directly on the plate. If it's shifted a little bit, sometimes it'll think charge, no charge, charge, no charge. But
now, does that use a type of NFC, near field communication,
or
is it some other?
I'm going to guess here and think that the NFC activates and says, okay, I'm now within range of the plate to start charging, I think.
Okay.
I'm just guessing there.
And it uses some sort of, like, waves of something to charge it? I don't know exactly how that
works. I'm not sure. I've not looked into that technology
either.
That'd
be interesting to take a look at. I mean, I saw a video a couple of months ago where somebody had actually, they rigged their nightstand, and they were able to put NFC communicators and a charging plate underneath their nightstand, and you couldn't even see any of the wires on the nightstand. They just kind of went down and plugged in.
That's pretty cool.
And it was pretty neat. So that's pretty cool stuff that they can do that. And I mean, I'm looking forward to this type of technology for us to be able to have a laptop that we set somewhere, and maybe you go to a conference room table, and that conference room table is integrated with a wireless charger of some sort, and you sit your laptop there, and while you're at that conference room table, you're charging your laptop at the same time, or at your desk. There's a certain spot on your desk where you can put your laptop there, and it charges.
And like, you get your home, you have a nightstand, you put your phone, your laptop, tablet, all that could be sitting on the one surface, and it could be charging.
Right.
That's awesome.
That is pretty cool. Good stuff to look forward to.
Oh.
Your turn.
Sorry. Let's see here. This was posted a few hours before Apple had its big announcement, which we will talk about in a little bit. Amazon, they have the Fire Phone. They dropped the price from $199 to 99 cents. At that price, the Fire Phone comes with a free Amazon Prime membership too, but it's also a 2-year contract with exclusive carrier, AT&T, writes Extreme Tech. Whether that's going to be enough to stimulate sales is an open question. $450 unlocked is still a tough sell for a device that is overmatched by products like the cheaper Nexus 5 or the recently unveiled $500 second-gen Moto X. An August adoption rate from advertising agency Chitka claimed that the total Amazon Fire Phone sales were paltry, representing just 0.015 to 0.02% of phones in use, or fewer than 30,000 phones. The number will have doubtlessly trickled up slightly since then, and it's true that Amazon's partners like NTT have aggressively pushed for phone sales in online stores.
It's dead. I mean, it's like the Facebook phone.
What was it, the Kin? You remember the Kin? I never even saw one. There was, it was like a stripped down smartphone that was basically like a feature phone that had a Facebook app integration, and that was pretty much it. I'm gonna see if I can find it, but there was like two versions, and it was out for like a day, I think.
Yeah, I mean, that's the same thing as the Facebook phone. There was a big hype over, you know, what Facebook was going to do. They came out with this phone, and it went nowhere. It's like the Amazon Fire Phone. It's kind of along the same lines. I mean,
2 months. Sorry.
It was the Kin phone.
The Kin 1 and Kin 2 went to market in May 2010. Within 2 months, Verizon stopped selling the phones because of poor sales. Microsoft scrapped its planned European release, stopped promoting the devices, ceased production, and reassigned the Kin development team to other projects. So, interesting. It was a short-lived mobile phone line designed for users of social networking. Described the phone's target demographic as men and women between ages 15 and 30. Manufactured by Sharp and sold through Verizon Wireless. So, same thing, you know.
Yeah, I mean, and you know, some things just don't hit. I mean, you know.
Or they're too late.
Windows 8. Windows 8 just didn't hit. I mean, you know, there were some things that just didn't hit off well with users, and it just didn't take.
Right.
You know, it's the same thing with the Fire Phone. I mean, it, you know, is it a good phone? I don't know. I haven't used it. You know, can you pick it up and talk to people? I'm sure you can, but does it have the right features? And obviously the answer to that is not for most people, since, you know, they're only taking up 0.02% percent of the phone market. So, you know, they'll just need to go back to the drawing board. BGR article about Windows, when we started hearing reports last week that Microsoft planned to kill the Windows Phone and Windows RT brands instead of calling everything Windows, the BGR says they were skeptical that Microsoft would really make such a move. After all, if someone's bought a Windows tablet, they might easily get confused about whether it runs the full desktop-centric version of Windows or the mobile-centric version. However, we now have two new reports confirming that Microsoft really is planning to put the Windows Phone brand out to pasture and just refer to every single platform that it puts out as Windows.
Interesting.
Yeah, Geeks on Gadget has obtained a leaked internal Microsoft document outlining the company's plan to kill the Microsoft Phone brand by next year and refer to everything as Windows going forward. The leaked document also says Microsoft will be killing off the Nokia brand at around the same time and will simply refer to all new smartphones as Microsoft phones. The Verge confirms that Geeks on Gadget report and notes that the marketing for the Windows Phone formula known as Windows Phones has already started. Microsoft's latest commercials for the Lumia 930 don't even mention the Windows Phone at all. In fact, Microsoft refers to Windows Phone simply as Windows. The HTC's new One M8 for Windows also drops the Windows Phone just in favor of Windows. So, you know, it's just another marketing thing with Microsoft. You know, they're trying to obviously bring brand everything under one. Is it going to work? I don't know.
Well, you know, they're even considered renaming Internet Explorer, and they still may. So, I mean, they're really rebranding everything. They're trying to really reinvent themselves.
Maybe they'll just name it Windows 2.
Huh?
Maybe they'll just name it Windows 2.
Windows.
Who needs marketing people?
Browser Windows.
Who needs branding people?
Hire us.
We're just going to call everything Windows.
We got this.
Open Windows and go click on Windows. And then open the Windows tab.
Use your Windows and left Windows on the Windows. That's the Windows icon. No, the other Windows icon. Microsoft, we got a lot of Microsoft news today, sorry. Let's see.
It's to balance out all the Apple stuff we're going to talk about in the deep dive.
I actually thought about that. I was going to post something. I thought, nah. Let's see here. If you have a kid ages, I don't know, between 6, I was going to say maybe 16, maybe even older, you've probably heard them talk about, if they're a gamer, Minecraft. Microsoft is working on potentially acquiring one of the biggest developers, which is over Minecraft, Mojang. For $2 billion, according to Wall Street Journal. They're working to verify the story, but they can't confirm the rumor at the time. But the Wall Street Journal has a history of getting these things correct. The report claims that the deal could go through as early as this week. If Microsoft does seal the deal, it will own an indie gaming phenomenon. Minecraft has players building Lego-like structures with simple-looking 3D blocks and is caught on with players of all ages. I'm sure people have seen this online, but it's the game that looks really retro, really, you know, blocky and everything. Since debuting in 2011, Minecraft has sold more than 55 million copies on PC, smartphone, and consoles. It is especially popular with young kids, and industry observers often note that it is the Super Mario Brothers for the up-and-coming generation of gamers. The scope of Minecraft's popularity is difficult to overstate. The physical edition of Xbox 360 is the 9th best-selling game of 2013 at U.S. retailers, despite coming in out a year after the digital release of the same platform, and 2 years after its PC launch. That's a little crazy. Typically, games die out and fizzle really quickly, but Minecraft seems to just have endured. I mean, it's a little crazy. Let's see. For Microsoft, this acquisition could give it the boost it needs to compete with Sony in the next-gen console war, which they've not been doing well. The PlayStation 4 has outsold Xbox One every month since they debuted in November, and Microsoft has already tried several promotions, adjustments, and price cuts to catch up. Owning Minecraft could honestly change everything. Because, I mean, I tried playing Minecraft, and I was like, oh, this isn't quite so fun.
You're just not in the right generation for Minecraft.
Apparently not. I mean, they're like, you have to hit a tree, and then that makes, like, your basic building block. Like, you punch a tree, and then, bam, you've got a building block. And then you can, like, use that to make other things. And I'm sure people are, if they're listening, they're like, oh, you're completely wrong. But the whole goal of the game in, like, the main exploration mode or whatever is build something. Mm-hmm. And, like, you have to have something built by nighttime, or these, like, creatures are going to come and explode and kill you. And, like, then you have to, like, just build things. Apparently there is, like, a campaign, but I don't know. It's not for me.
I haven't played it either, so I don't know. We all know I'm not.
What have you played?
Yeah, no. I never did find the princess in Mario Brothers. So, Recode article about some tech funding. Question is, what's Twitter up to? Twitter is offering as much as $1.5 billion in convertible notes to private investors in an attempt to stock up on cash. According to a Securities and Exchange Commission, or SEC, document filed Wednesday, Twitter, which had roughly $2 billion in the bank following its latest earnings announcement in August, could come close to doubling that amount with Wednesday's move. A company spokesperson declined to comment on what specifically the money would be used for, but it's possible Twitter could use the funds to make another acquisition in the near future. Now, keep in mind, Twitter's made over a dozen acquisitions in the last 2 years. Other tech companies, including Google and Netflix, have also borrowed money this year, and it's possible Twitter is simply looking to take on debt in hope of building its war chest while interest rates are low right now. Twitter still isn't profitable, though. And they haven't been since going public in late 2013. Last quarter, Twitter reported a net loss of $145 million. So while the company's sales are gaining a fast clip, doubling to $312 million in the second quarter, its net losses were more than triple from the same period. And, you know, Twitter's been the conversation of a lot of business folks just because it's such a strange model. Yeah. You know, they went public. And, you know, and they kept losing money. They're continuing to lose money. And it's really strange. You would think that Twitter would make money. And, you know, they're trying to change some things. They just came out with a pay button this week in Twitter where you could pay for things in your, you know, in a Twitter feed. I think it's got like some sort of like a triangular button there that you can press on. But, you know, they're going to have to start making some money somehow. You can't report a loss all the time and continue to get investors to be interested in you. So, you know, the question is, when is that interest going to drop off? And, you know, for Twitter,
may already be happening.
Yeah, for Twitter, they need to be careful. That's for sure. So that wraps up our tech roundup. And now it's time to move on to app of the week. Kurt's over there smiling. You got to remember, see, we've been off for 2 weeks.
I'm out of practice,
and
man.
We're out of practice, and we're happy to be back with you. Yeah. But
there's this little red button that was not lit up, and yeah, I need to press that button.
Yeah, you got
to
press the button, Kurt.
Up.
There you go. There up go. And down.
That's enough of that.
My little boy would be at home saying, press the red button, Daddy. Press the red button. Our app of the week this week is a cool little app that a friend of mine found, actually, and showed to me. It's called Game Changers. GC.com is the G is in gold, C is in Charlie.com. And according to their site, they provide free scorekeeping and stat management tools for coaches, and live updates and recap stories for parents, players, and fans. So it's an app it's an iOS app, and I'm not sure what else it's available on. I don't remember.
Probably not Windows Phone.
Probably not Windows Phone, because nobody has one. I'm sorry. Probably not available on Windows. No phone.
You've hurt me.
But they do have a website, and you essentially go out and you set up a team, you put your roster in, you can put their email addresses and stuff in and communicate with them that way. And then, you know, you tell your family and friends, hey, I have this team out here. They go search for it in the app. And then while you're playing the game, whatever it may be, softball, baseball, basketball, soccer, whatever, you can watch that and watch the score come through on your device. So, you know, you got grandma and grandpa out in Texas, and little Johnny's playing here in Kentucky, and they can watch his game be scored
the game develops.
Instantly. Yeah, so pretty neat. Says here, your team keeps score, we do the math, parents and fans fall alive, and it has simple messaging tools as well and all that for free. So if you got a little league team, or maybe you're coaching high school, or you know, trying to figure out a way to keep better stats for your team, and you think, well, you know, it'd be nice to have an app to do that, go check them out, gc.com. It's Game Changers, and
iOS only.
It is iOS only. And actually, the friend of mine who told me about Game Changers is listening to our show right now.
No way.
And he said, "Go Changers, go me." He's the one that told us about that showed me Game Changers. So congratulations to Brad and showing us our app of the week.
We'll have to have him on someday.
We will. We need to have Brad on sometime and have him talk to us about tech news.
That testimonial for GC
for Game Changers, yeah. And if you've used Game Changers before and you want to talk about it, don't forget to jump on our Twitter feed at WCCR Tech Talk and tell us what you think about it. And that's our app of the week. We're going to move into our deep dive. A lot to talk about this week in our deep dive, Kurt. First of all, Network World article and also Recode article. We already talked about Gmail addresses, but also another big one is Home Depot. We see that Home Depot is one of the latest data breaches, and from the recent Network World article, we see that it may be even larger than the Target breach from last year. Which is just extremely, extremely scary. I hope that is not going to be the case, but it may well be. The Recode article says that Home Depot has confirmed that they did have a payment breach, and waiting for this article to pull up here on my computer, and that is. Should have already been up here. Says Home Depot said the theft could impact its customers in stores across the United States and Canada, but there was no evidence that online customers were affected or that debit personal identification number or PINs were compromised. The chairman and chief executive officer of Home Depot, Frank Blake, said, quote, "We owe it to our customers to alert them that we now have enough evidence to confirm that a breach has indeed occurred. It is important to emphasize that no customers will be responsible for fraudulent charges to their account," end quote. Now, the breach was first recorded by a security website, Krebs on Security. That's K-R-E-B-S on Security. Mm-hmm. Really cool site where this guy takes and talks about different security issues. And it said the problem could extend all the way back to April and affect all of Home Depot's 2,200 stores.
Ooh.
So they don't have a whole lot of details right now, but if that's the case, then that could be larger than the Target breach.
That's crazy. That is absolutely crazy. Oh, wow. I mean, where are things heading? I mean, every week you hear of a new breach. And, you know, each new company has some sort of new breach everywhere. I mean, what's going to happen?
Well, I don't know. I mean, There's not any not a whole lot of details available right now, but if this is as big as Target or if it's bigger, Target's already spent $146 million to resolve their data breach problem since the fourth quarter of 2013. So, you know, there's a real number. We've talked about this before on the show, but there's a real number that goes along with this, and that's $300 a person. $300 per person is what you have to spend in order to get these people the credit checks they need, in order to make sure that you have made sure that your company is assessing your liability. $300 a person, and they're thinking that it could have it says here. It could be more than the 40 million payment card numbers and 70 million other pieces of customer data that was stolen from Target last year.
Now if you think, you know, $200 per person, that's not too bad if you're a big business, but usually they have millions of accounts. Oh, man. That's crazy. I mean,
yeah. Well, and with the Gmail hack this week too, I mean, it just makes us think of a few things. I mean, first of all, you know, the scary thing is the length of time that these things have been going on. We see that Home Depot has been going on probably since April. I mean, we're in October now. We're not in October. We're in September. October's next month, right?
Yeah.
It's been going on since April, so we're talking several months. And, you know, the Gmail email addresses, that's been going on for a little while too. So, you know, first of all, watch your credit cards and your accounts.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there's...
Check statements.
Exactly. There's people out there already who are stealing credit card numbers, and they're being smart about it. They're not going out and charging, you know, $700, $800, $900 on the credit card, boom, like that. They're charging, you know, $9.95 on a couple thousand credit cards, you know. And the question is, would our listeners notice if there's a $9.95 charge on their credit card that they didn't charge? You know, if you don't check your credit card statement, then you won't notice it.
Right.
You know, and secondly, know your rights. I mean, the number, the $300 number, that includes money that gives you a credit check. You mean, just like that he said there, Frank Blake said there, he said, it's important to emphasize that no customers will be responsible for fraudulent charges to their accounts. I mean, that's your right. Your right is to not be charged for fraudulent accounts. So know those rights. You know, and then also, I think we talked about this earlier, change your passwords. Right, Kurt?
How many times? I think once an episode, no, maybe like three times an episode we end up saying this, but I mean, really, it's like having your keys sitting out somewhere, you know, for, you know, a while. I mean, I can't even get a good example, but I mean, a good analogy, but for another thing, you're not going to give your password out to somebody if they ask for it. You know, if you don't know, then know exactly who it is. You're not going to give your keys to your car or house to somebody unless you know exactly who it is. I mean, oh man, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, your password, and it's hard to get under people to understand this, but your username and your password that you use are your forms of authentication. They determine to the system who you are, okay? And if you provide those to someone else, then you're essentially telling the system, okay, this person's me.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I can tell that Kurt is Kurt because I'm sitting across from Kurt right now and I'm looking him in the eyeballs. But a computer can't do that.
No.
Okay? Not without multiple forms of authentication.
Right.
So if a system only requires a username and password, like most things do, then if I provide somebody else with my username and password, then I have just provided them me. All the computer knows,
it's
me.
Yep.
So why would I do that? You know, why would I, you know, provide somebody else with my credentials? And we realize that in these cases, somebody has stolen those credentials.
Mm-hmm.
But in the Gmail attack, like we talked about earlier, that was probably mostly from phishing.
That's what I'm thinking anyway. The way I'm reading it, it's phishing attempts and maybe some brute force attack, maybe some sort of cracking like that. But it seems like it was just phishing attempts, really.
So, I mean, you know, be careful. You know, when you get that email from Home Depot, not that this is what happened in this. They're saying it's come from the stores, which meant that they had a system attack at their data center. That's bad.
Very bad.
They had a system attack somewhere along the way. If it's like Target,
the third party.
Yeah, it's third party. Their credit card processor got attacked. And we don't ever hear anything about Target's credit card processor.
No, it's all the Target. I mean, that's who's holding the account initially.
Exactly.
So
you know, but you get that email and it's from, you know, whatever, company XYZ. Maybe even looks like your work email. You get that email that looks like it came from your workplace. And it says, hey, the administration and your IT department has asked you to change your password. Click here. You know. If you're not expecting that email to come through, don't click on the link.
Or if you hover over the link and it's a big, long string of random letters and numbers,
mm-hmm.
Pretty sure that's not legitimate.
Yeah, if it's a bunch of gobbledygook that ends in like .fr or .ru and is trying to send you out to France or Russia, that's probably not your workplace.
That's a good way to put it.
Kurt's exactly right. You know, hover over that link. Don't click on it. Hover over it. And if it looks weird, even if it doesn't look weird, but especially if it looks weird, you know, don't click on that link. because they may provide you with a page that looks just like the login that you're supposed to use to log into your service of whatever you're trying to log into, but it's a phishing attempt. That's with a PH in front, PH, not with an F. Not like you're going to cast your reel, but phishing with a PH. It's extremely common.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. See it all the time.
Well, we've talked about data breaches in the past on this show. We're going to talk about data breaches in the future on this show because once or twice a week we hear about one.
Yeah.
And it just continues to increase in frequency. It continues to increase in financial destitution, I mean, of the company. And it's scary.
Honestly, but what's going to happen in the near future? I mean, I know, what was it, DARPA, somebody said, you know, the username password system isn't working. Mm-hmm. They're trying to look at a new way of doing authentication. I mean, is every computer going to start shipping with a fingerprint reader? And then, like, that's directly from the web page. Every web page, like, every company is going to have, like, a little spot for your fingerprint data. I mean, is that the future? Is there going to be some sort of retina scan? I mean, what's going to happen next? And they talked about your phone being authenticator. What if you use your phone? In theory that everybody has a phone, you know, you'll hold your phone up to something or other and you'll have an authenticator on your phone or something. I mean, I even have an app that on my phone that every, it's like an RSA token where every few seconds that a string of numbers change, and it will I'll go to authenticate and it says type in the key off that token there. And, you know, is that part of what's the future? You know, what is the future? Wait, is everybody going to have a device on them that they'll help use to authenticate on, like, web pages and things? I mean, it's way too early to tell, but you know something's going to change. It's going to be, it could be in the next 5 years, it could be the next 10 years. Something big is going to happen that's going to revolutionize and change how we do things. It's going to make things a lot more complicated, and it's going to make things safer for a while until people start cracking that as well.
Well, there's a set of rules that businesses must follow in order to keep themselves safe. And why is it Home Depot's fault that their data got stolen, even if it didn't come out of their data center? We don't have that information yet. But even if it didn't come out of their data center, like at with Target, because it's their responsibility as the company, because that is their customer, they're supposed to check up on their third party. And I'm sure that Target's had many heated conversations with their third party, but when push comes to shove, and Kurt and I sit here and talk about this, we don't talk about third party XYZ got breached. We talk about Target got breached.
Yeah.
And so it really comes down to the company and the technology, and especially the security people in that company, knowing what they're doing and keeping on their toes and not laxing off and making sure that they keep consumers safe. And, I personally think we're going to start to see more government interaction. I think is where I really think that's where it's going. I really think we're going to see sections of the government, especially of the CIA and FBI, and of DHS, Department of Homeland Security. I think we're going to see sections of those pieces of government and the CIA. I already say that. Create a group to regulate more so than they do already.
Online security.
Mm-hmm. I think that's where it's coming.
That's a good point. That's a really good.
I think that's where it's going.
Kill you.
So, you know, data breaches. We talked about it today. We'll talk about it next week. We talked about it in shows before. Moving on. Whether or not you realized it, Apple came out with some new products this week. Most of you who are under the sound of our voice out there in radio land, and those of you who are listening to the podcast probably already know.
Digital land.
There you go. Radio land and digital land. Probably already know about the new iPhone and Apple Watch that have come out. And so we thought that it would be a good idea to take a look at some of the numbers from the latest product releases instead of just talking about the product releases that you probably already know about. But these are interesting. I'm going to go over the watch ones here, Kurt, if you want to hit the or I'm going to go over these first ones if you want to hit the iPhone ones, and then I'll look at the watch ones.
Sure.
But the App Store has continued growth. We're talking about Apple now, okay? The Apple App Store has continued its growth, reaching 1.3 million apps on the App Store. All right. 200 million daily U.S. transactions occur with Apple. $12 billion is spent in credit and debit transactions per day in the U.S. So we're talking about U.S., and that's not specifically with Apple. We're talking about U.S. sales on debit and credit cards in the U.S. is $12 billion. Why is that important? Because we know that Apple introduced Apple Pay. And we know that with Apple Pay, they'll get a percentage of that because they're processing that. Okay. And so $12 billion in credit and debit transactions per day in the U.S. That's just an unreal number to me. 220,000 merchants will support Apple Pay when it comes, when it's ready here in the next few weeks. So, I mean, that's pretty exciting, I think. Does it open up a lot of security problems? Oh, you better believe it. But it's interesting that that Apple Pay is going to be there and going to be usable by 220,000 merchants.
You know, they'll have the fingerprint. I'm sure people say, you know, well, my phone's safe because it uses my fingerprint. Well, I saw a video that was released hours after the iPhone 5 was released that where somebody had taken wood glue and was able to lift a fingerprint and authenticate it with wood glue on the phone. So,
well, I mean, if the iPhone had the most secure fingerprint reader and the best fingerprint reader, then we wouldn't be able to afford it.
Right.
So, I mean, you know, they
So, yeah. Talking about the iPhone, a new, I'm not sure how to pronounce this, but F2.2 aperture sensor that lets in 81% more light. The iPhone 6 will start at $199 for the 16-gigabyte, $299 for the 32-gigabyte, and $399 for the 64-gigabyte versions with a two-year contract. The iPhone 5C is to start at $0, while the iPhone 5S will start at $99. Again, I think this is with a contract. Mm-hmm. The iPhone 6 Plus is to start at $299 for the 16 gigs, $399 for the 64 gig, and $499 for the 128 gig. Now, this is basically, for the price points, they're $100 more expensive for the 6 Plus, and is a little bit larger.
Do you notice where they changed the sizes of the phones?
Yeah.
So it used to, the biggest you could get was 64. Mm-hmm. You couldn't get any bigger than 64. Now they've taken away the 32, and it goes from 16 to 64 to 128.
I have a theory on that one. You know what they did not say in the big speech, keynote speech, whatever? They dropped the classic iPod. That was 160 gigs. They dropped that one. So you can't get an iPod anymore with a click wheel. I thought that's interesting.
Sort of trying to push everybody to get an iPhone, I guess.
In that direction. Or saying, well, they dropped this. What am I going to do now? And say, well, good. They have an 128 gig one for iPhone 6. So, interesting.
Well, and they've got to go somewhere with increasing their storage because you can't modify it yourself. I mean, I don't know about your phone. On your Nokia, can you put a SD card in there?
Not on mine. No.
Okay, but you can on some of them, though, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, you can increase your storage.
Mm-hmm.
But on the iPhone, you can't do that. There's no way to increase your storage. You just got what's in it.
Yep.
So, you know, that's something to think about while you're purchasing an iPhone. Some other numbers that we learned from and that aperture thing that Kurt was talking about, that's the focal view. That's 2.2 focal view aperture, and that's pretty cool that they can get more light into the camera now like that. We also see the iPhone 6 is to have a resolution of 1334 by 750, while the iPhone 6 Plus is to have a resolution of 1920 by 1080. So that's full HD. That's an unreal resolution for a phone. Now, granted, you really can't tell the difference between 720 and 1080 p unless you're far enough away from the device. What I'm trying to say is, I don't think if you hold it up 10 inches from your face, you're gonna be able to tell the difference.
Right.
But that's the resolution that it's gonna be at.
Well, let's see. The new A8 chip features 2 billion transistors and is 25% faster in terms of CPU performance than the A7 chip. It is also 50% more energy efficient and 13% smaller. The 14 hours of 3G talk on the iPhone 6, up from 10, while the 24 hours on the iPhone 6 Plus, bigger phone, probably bigger battery.
Exactly, and not only that, but it's from the A8 chip as well. So the A8 chip, where it has the 50% more energy efficient, it's allowing the battery to go longer, which is great. So that's good. I mean, you have longer battery performance. And then they also announced the watch. So the watch, they made an interesting statement and said that it is accurate to plus or minus 50 milliseconds. So I thought that was interesting. Shouldn't it be? I mean, it's digital. So, I mean, plus or minus 50 milliseconds. So that way, if you want to make sure that you're not going to be 50 milliseconds late to work, you're accurate to that.
Do you think that just, you know, Apple always says this is revolutionary. This is this. And they had to have another data point, so they just came up with something, you know.
Maybe. And just to kind of back up just a second, for those of you who may be listening and maybe you haven't caught the newest Apple news, they brought out the Apple Watch. Now, for the longest time, we thought that it was going to be the iWatch, but it's not the iWatch. It's the just the Apple Watch. Now, one thing we don't really know about the Apple Watch is we saw it and they have pictures of it online, but it's not coming out till sometime in 2015. They say it's coming in 2015. So, you know, as far as what we saw at Apple Live this week. Versus what it's actually going to be like, there may be some differences there. I mean, I would think they're going to come out with several iterations of the software before they push it out. But the Apple Watch is going to work with the iPhone 5, 5C, 5S, 6, and 6 Plus, and it will start at $349 and will ship in early 2015, according to their stats. So, you know, that's kind of what was going on at Apple Live this week as far as the numbers are concerned.
It's not called the iWatch because Swatch has a trademark on it, and Apple couldn't secure that name. So
that's interesting.
Mm-hmm. It's a cached webpage, so I couldn't get the actual webpage, but it says that Apple's iWatch trademark problems Swatch because the iSwatch they hold that trademark apparently. So interesting. You think Apple could just throw money at it?
That's what I was getting ready to say. Pay them off if you really want to name it that. But, I mean, maybe they don't want it to follow the naming scheme. I don't know.
While searching, apparently Louis Vuitton says that the Apple Watch is too feminine for men to wear. Interesting.
I don't know about that. I really like the one. They have several different bands. Now, some of the bands look kind of girly to me, but they have one band that is a... it's a link band. It has like a bunch of different links in it. And I tell you what, that band in the black color looks really, really nice. I really like it.
I actually don't like the curved face. I'd rather be more angular.
More like a cut off on the edges.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you know, it's what it is. We're going to see, you know, how many people are going to buy into it. Is it going to be a great, wonderful thing for Apple, or is it going to be a flop? I mean, we know people are going to buy it just because it's an Apple product. Right. As Kurt rolls his eyes, he always likes to talk about that.
Oh, I've got a rant for a second. Oh, well.
rant. Have fun.
Let's start from the beginning. Samsung created has their Galaxy phone, right? And it's larger than the iPhone. And now Apple is releasing a phone that's larger. Along that matches the sizes of the Samsung Galaxy. Samsung releases a watch that goes with their phone. Multiple ones you could actually go with, take pictures, you know, give you like another little screen to go with. And now Apple is releasing a watch that goes with their phones. And, you know, it feels like Apple's catching up now. I mean, what's going on there? Why, you know, they would innovate. Is this the start of them not really innovating anymore? Are they playing it safe and seeing what the market does and then jumping into a market? And as we've always seen, Apple they'll release something and then keep adding, you know, tweaks to it. Never buy the first version of an Apple product because, you know, what was the most recent one? The antenna problem, of what people call the antenna gate. You know, there was a problem with that one. You know, there's always little problems with Apple's product, the very first one. The last one you get in a product line is always amazing. But, you know, maybe you should hold off just a little bit, let them polish it off a little bit more.
You know, and that's a good point to bring up here. Another thing that they talked about was that there's going to be a September 17th release of iOS 8.
Mm-hmm.
And we're on iOS 7 right now. iOS 8 is going to be the latest version of the iOS software family. And that's going to be what's placed on the iPhone 6 and the iPhone 6 Plus. and it'll be available for public download, like I said, on the 17th. It's probably not the best idea to download it on day one. Number one, you probably won't be able to get to it because there could be a bunch of people trying to download it. Number two, you know, wait for the bugs to fix out of it. Mm-hmm. They're going to have security issues. They're going to have all kinds of people trying to hack it and crack it. So, you know, give it a little bit of time before you download it and go strong with it. You may want to kind of hold off on that a little bit, but before you go out and just download that willy-nilly. So, but I think that's pretty much going to end our deep dive. And now I think what we want to do is jump into our what are we going to next, Kurt?
We're taking numbers?
Yeah, let's do it. Let's talk about tech in numbers. So today, the technology stock is up 16, a little over a tenth of a percent, 16 hundredths of a percent today. And we've been talking about Apple. So Apple is selling at 101.43 a share today. They're up almost half a point, and they've got that wonderful market cap of $613 billion. And Microsoft was also up today, a little over a tenth of a point. And so we're, a little over a tenth of a point. And Yahoo, surprisingly, was up over a little tenth of a point today, too, surprisingly enough. And the top gainer for today was JDS Uniface Corporation. They were up just over a point and a quarter, or right at a point and a quarter today. And so technology market looking good for September 11th. And that is tech in numbers.
And now,
Kurt's favorite part.
Let's see here. Weird and wacky tech. This one. How, Justin, I assume you have one or two remotes at your house, right?
Yeah, my iPhone.
Well, I guess you've not really lost that, but I know a lot of people that have lost their remote. You know, I've misplaced my remote, whatever. Well, what if your remote was so large that you you couldn't misplace it? Or what if it was a pillow? Have you ever wanted a pillow as a remote? I can't say that I have. But relax, get comfy and take control with our pillow and remote in one. This remarkable sofa pillow is also remote control. Built-in universal remote for up to 6 home theater systems. Programmed to recognize more than 500 kinds of devices, easy to click fabric buttons, power saving auto shut off, and uses 2 AAA batteries. Oh, not included. You'll never lose this remote between the cushions because it is a cushion. I'm just reading directly from their website. The pillow remote is fast and easy to set up with pre-programmed automatic code searching, blah, blah, blah. So basically, if you use any universal remotes, this probably is just a universal remote with a circuitry built into a cushion. And looking at the picture of this, it's just this big brown cushion, and there's a bunch of buttons on it: TV, VCR, satellite, DVD, cable. I think that's auxiliary or audio.
Don't forget about the big button that says activate down at the bottom.
There's a big button on the bottom right that says activate. I don't really know about fashion, but it just looks like a pillow.
How could this be comfortable, though? I don't understand. I mean, if you've got all that wiring in back behind it, I don't understand how it could be comfortable.
If they were smart, that you have, you know, cushion, circuit board cushion, you know, yeah, it's sandwiched in between there. But I mean, it looks like somebody jokingly put the buttons, like, stitch the buttons on a pillow, except this obviously is a pillow. I mean, I'd be afraid of, like, you fall asleep on it and it's continually shooting like infrared into your head, you know. That'd be what I'd be scared of. But, you know, there you have it. There's your remote pillow. Price, like, I found on one, it said $30.
$30, that's it?
But, man, if I go to Brookstone, is where I see this, it's out of stock.
It's out of stock? That's too bad. I was going to buy 5.
Wait, no, the one does, like, 5 systems. So.
Oh, so I only need one?
You only need one.
Oh, I thought I still needed 5 remotes.
You know, this might be good for kids, like, because, you know, you hand the remote here, try the remote, and they just, like, sling it across the room.
Yeah, here's your remote. You can set your plate of snacks on it and then accidentally push all the buttons and make the TV go crazy.
Oh, I get it now. So apparently all the circuit board is like put in one little thing, and I think their wires to go to the buttons. So at worst, you'd be sleeping on a wire, but still.
And it still doesn't sound comfortable, but oh well. So that is goofy tech. Go out to brookstone.com and get your pillow remote control, and that will definitely make your day. Well, we certainly appreciate you tuning in today to Tech Talk today. Don't forget, you can find us on Facebook at www.facebook.com/WCCRTechTalk, and also on Twitter at WCCRTechTalk. And don't forget, you can check out the podcast of today's show by searching Tech Talk Today on iTunes, or by just taking a look at it on Facebook. And typically, Kurt here would say stay tuned, but I think we're going to not have anybody behind us now that we're on Thursdays.
Well, stay tuned for, I believe they're still ironing out the schedule for the students, because students have come back on campus, and be sure to listen in if you're within the LPFM range, and you'll be listening to them as they do their shows.
Sounds good. Well, I'm Justin Hensley.
And I'm Kurt Lawson. You've been listening to WCCR 94.5 LPFM, Williamsburg, Kentucky. Thank you very much. Have a good day.